Welcome everyone to our first 2026 meeting. The weather cooperated until today, which was very nice. We welcome everybody online. I'm going to try to outline here, but we have quite a few people online. We have another half people here in person. Just by way, everybody should, for those of you that are virtual, you should have received the agenda in a minute from a packet for today. Everyone else should have it in front of you. Just by way of things that happened, we met in October. Sarah Jones asked to resign just a few weeks ago. Some part for me, Sarah's been very active since she joined the board. I'm very grateful for her involvement. She was extremely involved in the operations committee and in addition to that subcommittee on operations working on the employer survey, been very involved in going through and certifying the one-stop phone company that Sarah enjoyed doing. She'll be missed, but she has other commitments than I think she was sad to, but decided to step down. So we will be working to replace her along with a few other people. Some terms are coming up, and we do have some other vacancies from people moving to new roles. And so always
have my HR hat on in this role. We're always recruiting for this board. I did mention with the executive committee, if anybody has contacts or strong contenders that would be good fit for the board, we're really trying to target ag, tech, applied tech plus energy, and healthcare. So if there's someone that you feel like in your circle of influence that might be a good fit in those three areas, if you could let myself or Liz know or Nicole know, those would be three industries that I'd like to get some additional representation to just stay on if we can. I would also, is Angela here?
Thank you.
Turner from DHS, DHHS.
She pops in a moment. You let me know, Nicole.
And then also, we do have a few people that called in and asked to be excused. And then we would also like to welcome Cheyenne. Cheyenne is our new administrative support for the board. If you'll recall, in our last board meeting, we announced that Natalie moved into Kim for help role supporting the committees and the work that's going on in those, which we're so glad. I'm so glad Natalie just slid over from anywhere. So we're grateful to have Natalie, but Cheyenne has stepped into Natalie's role. So most of the correspondence that you'll be seeing will come from Cheyenne. As far as board minutes, board information, if we need to vote on something, which we will, so we'll talk about that in a little bit. So watch for that, and we're so grateful to have Cheyenne. There's a lot of cheering and happiness that she's here, so we're grateful to have her. On the business end of things, as far as other things we needed to acknowledge, if you'll remember, I think it was the July meeting, we did our conflict of interest forms. There are still a few of those outstanding, but that is a requirement for us to complete those. Once Cheyenne gets through all her approvals and things that she needs to do in her new role, she'll be reaching out to any of you that have outstanding conflict of interest forms so we can get those submitted and on record. So just be aware of that. And then I do have... in your packet, I believe it's in your packet, there's a flyer for the town hall meeting.
Yep, yes.
Yeah, okay. There's the town hall meeting next week on Wednesday at 2 p.m. via Zoom for our Leoa state plan. And we'll get over this just a minute, but plan has to be submitted every 4 years, but updated every two, so basically it has to be submitted every 2 years, to be honest. So it has to be updated every 2 years. And we do have to have a public open meeting for that for comments. I've asked Diane to send out a calendar invite for everyone on the board. You are not required to go, but if you happen to find yourself not doing anything on Wednesday at 2 p.m., I would love for you to just hop on and just listen to the changes and things that we're looking for updates. I'm trying not to steal your thunder. Just to listen to the changes, as you know, the document's 300 plus pages. As a board, we're going to have to approve that. There'll be an executive summary comes out. But if you want to know any of the substantial changes and things we'll be looking at, that town hall will cover it. So, is that going to be recorded? It's not recorded? Okay. So if you are not busy or you're eating late lunch, click on that link that Cheyenne sends out and just hop in and listen. That would be great. But not required. Strongly encouraged. And then I'm just going to let Nicole, did I talk everything you need to talk about?
Yeah.
Will you just kind of go through a little bit more of the process of what our state plan entails?
Yeah. So I know we've got a number of new folks who maybe haven't been around when we've had to go through a state plan process. So under WIOA, we have a plan that as a state we submit every 4 years. So the four-year plan, we're currently in our 2024 through 2028 plan cycle. But how it works is we, every 2 years, modify it. So essentially every 2 years, we're updating our plan. Only resubmit every 4 years. So right now, we are in our modification year of that 2024 to 2028 plan. And that plan is developed with all of your input. So we've reached out to committee chairs to get their input on sections where we report out on the work that your committees are going to do over the next couple of years, as well as what our focus is as a state when it comes to WIOA. So your guys' weigh in on that plan is exceedingly helpful and necessary and needed. So we do send that out for approval. It's super light reading. I'm sure with your board, you can read it. It's only about 300-ish pages. So,
promise this an auto report.
Yeah. Well, apparently it's going to be an AI. But kind of how that works is there's different sections on it. So the plan that is the big one is, I'll be honest, not the prettiest plan because we essentially have to copy and paste it into a web portal for Department of Labor to actually review it and approve it. But what we do to try and make your life easier is we do a pretty summarized executive summary that you can utilize to kind of actually hit the high levels of what we'll be working on as a board and as a state when it comes to WIOA for the next couple of years. So we will be sending that out for your approval virtually. Take a look through it. If you have any questions, we have our current state plan posted online. We're just modifying that plan. So we're updating information around we update the information with the economic update. So we work with our local economists that are here in the room. They update what the current projections and outlook are for areas of the state and the various components. We get updated focused on what your committees are working on. There's a portion for vocational rehabilitation as well as adult education. And in our plan, we have a combined state plan that also includes the jobs for veteran state grants, so JVSG or services to veterans. Lindsay Cropper is helping with that portion of the plan right now while we're in the process of hiring a veterans program manager. So they'll get help with submitting that once they're on board. So typically the plan is submitted at the beginning of March. We are still waiting on official guidance from Department of Labor. So even though we're going to have our town hall next week and we started working on things based off of that guidance, we still might make some additional adjustments. But when we send out the plan for approval, we'll highlight and tell you, like, hey, here's the sections that we have updated. So one of the main things, though, that we are incorporating with this new plan or plan modification is the current administration has released And it's, I guess, I don't know the best way to call it, but
strategic plan.
Thank you. It's called America's Talent Strategy, Building the Workforce for the Golden Age. So for those of you online, I put the link in there, but we'll include it in the minutes that are being sent out. So as part of that, we've already kind of been tasked to look and see how we can incorporate and align with those strategies. And there's five specific strategies that are highlighted in that document. They're industry-driven strategies, work mobility, integrated system, accountability, and flexibility and innovation. So those are kind of the five pillars that are highlighted in that we're going to be focusing on incorporating in this modification. And that'll be, I think, a lot of the discussion we have over the coming years of how we can help align with those pillars and move that work forward here at the state of Utah. So any questions on the process or what our plan is? This really guides the work you do in the committee. And like I said, you guys are the ones that help us through your input, kind of tell us, like, yeah, this is where we should focus.
So the only thing I would ask is if your chairs or co-chairs happen to reach out to you. I'm not asking if you're on the youth committee, it'll be apprenticeship section, but if your committee chair happens to reach out and ask for feedback, will you just watch for that to come through? It's probably happened mostly yet.
Yeah, I think we've gotten
most of the time. So just watch for that town hall. Anything else about the WEO plan? So after we go through that, we'll need to do a virtual vote. So watch for that to come between January 14th and March 1st.
Yeah.
Before March 1st, because they don't want to wait till the last minute. Angela, sorry. I'm like, you just walked in and sat down. We'd like, Angela is, this is your first meeting with us, right? So Angela is our new rep from the Department of Health and Human Services. So we'd like to welcome her. It's her first board meeting. So thank you so much for joining us. Half of us are online. They're all behind me. So thank you for being here. We do have a quorum. Which, if you remember, last time we did, and it was rough. If everybody in your packet, you do have a copy of the minutes from our last meeting in October. I went through them, and they looked fine, but I there's nothing for them. So I just need a motion to approve the minutes from October. Shannon, thank you. I need a second. Thank you, Matt. Any discussion or... Typos? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so moved, the minutes pass. Okay, moving on to the agenda to the One Stop Certification for Lehigh. For the American Job Center in Lehigh, we have four board members, though, which is super exciting. And thank you for your time. Sarah Jones, once that was her last one. Stephen, our chair for the committee serving individuals with disabilities, was there. Kendall Thomas was also there. Kendall, one line was out today. I don't hear him today. And then also Tyler Lowe went for his first one. Thank you, Tyler.
That's great.
Great. Awesome. So I believe you were also voted to talk about it.
I was, yeah. It was really nice of Steve and Kendall and Sarah for that. Again, it was a great experience. We spent a few hours there. Everything went well. If they passed, it was good. Sarah and Steve and Kendall asked very good questions. Everyone was very prepared with responses, and we had great discussions that day. It really opened my eyes. Just everything, all of the resources available when everyone stops in a center like this, and I really enjoyed the role play aspect of it. And I thought that was just really fun. Just in speaking to some of the people that were there with us, I was just impressed with some of them that have been there for a while and have great experience. And I've worn a lot of different hats, and it was a great day and a great opportunity. So I'm glad it worked out to go down to it, and excited to go to another one in the future. Maybe I'll ask some good questions. I really, just listening to Steve and everyone, they asked some really good questions that got me thinking a lot about this. So.
Wasn't their first rodeo.
Yeah, I learned a lot from them. Yeah, it was great.
Good. That's so great. Thank you. The thing that I love about it is it just makes it so easy for me when I run into anybody in the community that might need support. And I'm like, have you gone to the Department of Work for Services? It's so easy to just be like, you need to go. Thank you. That's just a good testament to it. So I believe they passed, or you're going to recommend that they get approved. So if you have a motion, I will take it.
Sorry, I don't know how to deal with that.
All right.
Yeah.
I know. I also
want
another board that I can write it up a motion for you. It's so much fun. We just need a motion to approve the American Job Center One Stop in Lehigh. Yes.
Can I have a motion to approve?
You may make a motion.
Oh, you want me to move?
Yeah.
I don't need to repeat. I'll
Okay. I have a motion on the floor to approve the One Stop Center in Lehigh. Second. Second. Okay. Any discussion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I need to give online aye time to say aye. And I have people raising their hand and doing great. Okay. Any opposed? Okay, so moved. See how you pass. Then tell them to come back. I believe our next one is Natalie. So I'm sorry. Natalie's trying to do me a favor, and I just called her on the carpet. She's actually leaving the room to help me out. That was terrible. I'm really sorry. No, we're good. Now, because I still was talking about one stop. So our next one is in Twilla.
Yes.
It's not until September.
Yes.
So we have some time, but we have to do all the affiliates. So those are the little branches of the One Stop in our smaller communities, and there are 13 of those. And so the operations committee, I asked them to see if we can spread that out a little bit and start a little earlier so we're not all doing all those in October. So maybe watch for that, and we'll ask for some support on that. Do we have board members for the affiliate? We don't.
We've done it both ways.
Yeah, okay. Carrie, can I take care of it?
No.
And report to us in April on the plan.
We will do
that. Okay, so that doing all 13 of those in October just sounds really not fun. So, but also it sounds fun to the people that are trying to administer it all. We might have a lot of affiliates. We're going to try and spread it out. So not all done at one time. So, Zach, is that okay?
Yes.
I think you have a lot of them. So anyway, that's coming up. If anybody wants to jump on board for the bigger one for Twilla, that'll be in September, and just let Natalie know.
Can I just add one thing?
Yes,
so the affiliate ones are usually about 2 hours worth of work. Engagement with those. Obviously, one of the last times we did it was during COVID, so we did a lot of them virtual, but we have done them in person. Certainly the first time we did them all in person, and we tried to have like one or two DWS staff people at one, and where we could, we tried to have one board member. And so typically, if there was one in your area, we reached out to if you could go to that. But otherwise, they weren't able to do it. The DWS teammates, they just did it and reported back. So
it's not quite as rigorous as the 4 hour.
I think we did three one day one time as we were down in that particular area, but we'll work with that now.
Okay. The next thing in packet, if you'll remember from last board meeting, we talked a little bit about the annual report, and I wanted to cover it here in January.
Our annual report runs on a June to July. July to June. So this is a half a year old. But that's okay. So we're going to cover this, and I've asked Heather to go over a little bit. Each year, for those of you that are new, we hear from Casey and myself and then each of the committee chairs about what we've accomplished, and we go over some so I'm going to let Heather go ahead and jump into that. But for those of you that are online, we're looking at this, and Nicole Fabinet, who I've also been.
So it's only 6 pages, so not quite as lengthy as the stage plan, so this is a little lighter reading. But just to go over some of the highlights on here and some of the accomplishments, and my thing is that it's from July 24 to June 25, so keep that in mind. So the board, it did 6 recertifications of the one-stop centers. That included Logan, Cedar City, Clearfield, South County Metro, and Ogden. So kind of busy around that year. And those were all in person. So that was kind of fun, and they really enjoyed job shadowing, like was mentioned, you know, you like to job shadow and do those actual. You guys actually didn't job shadow, but did you? You
did a role play.
We're bouncing between role playing and job shadow, depending on what's up.
Yeah, depends on
that. And how busy they are.
It depends on.
It's really hard to role play at the downtown
like metro.
You gotta just watch. You do too much going on.
Yeah, you're right. So that those went all went really well. And then also, the board updated the job center criteria, which is a huge assignment for this. It's super important. So it's required under the WIOA Act, and we do that every 2 years. That has to be updated, and the board did do that. And also, another thing to make note is our service project that the board did in 2025. This was it. So we did. Do you remember the food drive thing that we did? Our goal was 5,000 pounds of food, and our actual. So this is with our food that we brought in and cash donations. It equaled over 15,000 pounds of food. So that was huge. So we way exceeded our goal.
How's our service project? So good. That's why we do them.
Yeah.
I've been thinking for October because we didn't know.
Yes, you do. Thank you. Yeah. And then next in the report is all of the cool things that we of the committee are doing. So please read through that because it highlights what each of your committees are doing for the board. And then, if you don't do anything else, read the success stories that are at the end. Right? Are those the favorite? Mm-hmm. So, Lindy told me I can't read the Workforce Development Division one because she's going to highlight it next time, right? So it's sort of some. So if you want to skip that one, you can because you're going to see more next time. Or actually, I wouldn't skip it. It's really good. Just, you'll get it twice. But I want to highlight the, vocational rehabilitation one, so I'm going to read it because it's so good. And then please read the adult education one too because it's really good. But speaking of our life in Utah for herself and her unborn child, Claudia was ready for a fresh start. She applied for vocational rehabilitation services, determined to become a medical assistant, but needing support to achieve her goal. Claudia's provided that. Claudia enrolled in the medical assistant program at Mountain Land Technical College in Lehigh. USOR assisted with essential costs, including scrubs, supplies, transportation, certification exams, and her health occupation Student of America membership. Claudia Wright, excelling in HOSA competitions at both state and national level. following her academic success, she connected with a Schuster Work Specialist for resume assistance, job development, and placement. This collaboration led to an internship and subsequent full-time employment with Revere Health, where Claudia was promoted to a medical assistant. I think that's so cool. And then in the adult education one, it's really cool because it talks about someone that came from another country and had to learn another language and then wanted to work for like KSL TV. So you're, I'm just giving you a little highlight, so you have to read it. Because I'm not going to read that one to you. So anyway, this the annual report is always fun and has really cool stuff in it. So please read that. But you want to read Megan's little report and Director Cowan's report as well. So that's it.
Thank you, Megan. Okay. I'm actually so excited about this next agenda item. No pressure, Vic. I'm really excited to hear what Vic and his team have to present on a new youth apprenticeship study that they have been working on. So, Vic, I'm going to turn the time over to you, if that's okay, Vic, turning in remotely with us. So I'm going to turn the time over to him and let him take it from there.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. No pressure to me because I'm just going to turn the time over to Amy and the rest of the people to present. But just to tee it up really quick, during the 2024 general session, we worked very closely with DWS leadership, USBE, as well as the talent board to draft a bill that would perform a statewide study on youth apprenticeships and look at governance structure in order to really leverage what the three agencies are doing and ultimately to make policy recommendations and frameworks so we can scale youth apprenticeships across the state. And looking at the policies, each of us have different statutory responsibilities and board roles. Some of those are in alignment. Some of those we found were maybe duplicative in nature, and some were kind of unclear. But the good thing is we've always been able to work really, really good together between DWS and USBE because of our relationships, because we tend to like to work with each other. But ultimately, we felt like it was necessary to really dive deep into the youth apprenticeship structures and policy, so that way we can set up stable systems and robust ecosystems between the agencies, regardless of who's in a position, so that we can continue to grow youth apprenticeships across the state. Now, we know that apprenticeships and youth apprenticeships are very much an untapped resource in terms of workforce development strategy. So before I do turn it over to Amy, I just want to thank Greg Paris, who's been an amazing partner, as well as Liz and Nicole from DWS. We've been now, and this is our fourth straight NGA Academy, National Governors Academy, for apprenticeships. And DWS has been a strong partner with ours throughout all of these four different academies. So with that, I'm going to turn over to Amy to lead the presentation. And please let us know if you have any questions as we move through this. Amy.
Sure. Thanks, Vic. I'm actually going to turn it over to the Utah Policy Education Center, who did our framework study. So they'll go through their slides and describe what they were doing, the recommendations, and then I'll wrap it up with what our four offices decided to move forward with out of the recommendations for this year. So I'm going to turn it over to Utah Policy Education Center.
Thank you, Vic and Amy. We appreciate the intro. And we're not sure who's driving the slides, but we can move on to slide 3, given what was just covered. So the Utah Education Policy Center at the University of Utah did a study that was titled Unlocking Opportunities Through Youth Apprenticeships in Utah. And as you'll notice, it's a multi-agency analysis that Vic had alluded to. And Amy Reynolds on our team is, if she hasn't already, is going to pop into the text a link to the full report if you would like to access that now or later. With the University of Utah as a research-based center, it's really important that we are working with partners and on behalf of partners that we work with in a rigorous way. As a policy center, we have four domains of work. We have research, evaluation, technical assistance, and capacity building, and professional learning. Projects like this allow us to delve into several areas of that portfolio of work. In executing our partnerships, such as the one that we engaged in here, we rely on five principles. First, to promote inquiry and shared understanding. Second, to build and sustain trust. Third, to promote effective communication and coordination. Fourth, to respect the expertise and experience of each of the partners. And fifth, to advance continuous improvement through our research insights. The opportunity to partner with True and others that Vic had mentioned in the beginning actually allowed us to thrive in that environment because of these partnership principles. The collaborative endeavor that we engaged in did exemplify both the power and promise of the approach that we just described. And from the outset of this project, it was deeply collaborative, not only in structure, but also in practice. So with us and then with others who were part of the legislation and part of the study. Each partner contributed their expertise and helped guide and inform, including external partners and in business and industry. I'll turn it over now to Amy Reynolds, who is our project lead for this study, and she's going to go through at a high level the study design and study findings, and then we'll return and tee up for Amy Andre the final recommendations that we have for policy.
Good afternoon. I'm pleased to be here with you all today, and I see we're already on the next slide, so thank you. So just to walk you through the study design, and then I'm also going to discuss the key findings across the three main areas before turning it back to Andrea to discuss the framework of recommendations that emerged from the study. So this is a comprehensive qualitative study design that we used here, so we could really get in-depth information from all of the various stakeholders that are part of the apprenticeship ecosystem in Utah to be able to come up with these recommendations in a way that's grounded in important background information and the perspectives of those involved. So to address these questions that related to understanding the roles and responsibilities of the state agencies in Utah for youth apprenticeship, how those agencies are aligned in their current efforts for it, and the barriers that exist to youth apprenticeship implementation and participation that we may need to work to overcome through various levers. So we began with an in-depth review of existing literature research on youth apprenticeship models and best practices to support and inform the study throughout. The data collection that we engaged in involved 18 in-depth interviews and 11 focus groups that included 38 participants, as well as policy documents, artifacts, and field notes. And that included all participating state agencies, as well as stakeholders from education, from industry, as well as from higher education, to make sure those were all representative. We used qualitative data analysis using both inductive and deductive coding, which means that we had some things that we brought to how we looked at the data based on what was in the research, and some things we allowed to come from the words of participants most directly. And with that, we arrived at this framework of recommendations we'll work up to. Next slide, please. So a part of that analysis, the first part, was understanding the roles and responsibilities for youth apprenticeship. So we think of how state agencies interpret and enact their roles as critical for creating coherent governance structures to sustain and expand youth apprenticeship in Utah. And our analysis identified seven interconnected key dimensions of agency roles and responsibilities. And leadership and governance, you'll notice, is intentionally centered as it's a key driver of those other operations. I'm not getting into the details of all of those individual functions, which you're welcome to look at in the full report, which is also linked in the chat box. But together, these interconnected dimensions reflect a full spectrum of functions that's required for a comprehensive youth apprenticeship system. And those responsibilities are distributed across the state agencies, and in some cases, they're shared by more than one, which doesn't necessarily reflect duplication of efforts, but sharing responsibilities in key ways based on things like stakeholder groups or functions and expertise. So when you look at the report, you may notice that there are shared efforts that are complementary as opposed to competing. Next slide, please.
This would be the 21.
We also looked at the ways in which the agencies were aligned in their efforts for youth apprenticeship. So this is a cross-agency analysis rather than the previous, which is a little bit more focused on a within-agency perspective. So we found we identified 10 key dimensions of interagency alignment that told us about the alignment around this work, both functionally and operationally, as well as their conceptual alignment, so how they define and understand things. And you'll notice that these dimensions fell across the spectrum. We did create three categories for ease of interpretation based on the relative strength of alignment. You can think of strong alignment as meaning that we saw consistency across agencies with minimal variation and no contradictions. Partial alignment included those areas where there was a general agreement, but there were cases of meaningful inconsistencies in terms of concepts or understandings. And then some areas for opportunities for alignment, places where there's chances to improve, where there was potential confusion, contradictions. So, for example, we saw really strong alignment across state agencies in terms of shared purpose, as well as a shared effort for policy development and advocacy work. On the other hand, we saw some places with opportunities for improvement in terms of really being more clear about role clarity and formal agreements, creating some shared data systems to support all the agencies in this operation, as well as some efforts for funding coordination. And next slide. So the last area of our findings was identifying what these areas in terms of barriers to youth apprenticeship implementation and participation, particularly for students in industry. We found six major categories of barriers. So we have logistical and implementation barriers that were really the practical obstacles hindering day-to-day operations and accessibility of programs like transportation and scheduling. Regulatory and policy barriers, these are the formal constraints that exist from laws, rules, and institutional policies that may have to do with program alignment and articulation or external policy constraints. We saw financial barriers that had to do with funding and resource limitations that affected sustainability and system-wide capacity for youth apprenticeship. Governance and coordination barriers about organizational challenges, looking at institutional boundaries between agencies or organizations. We noticed awareness and perception barriers. These are informational or really attitudinal obstacles rooted in limited knowledge or misconceptions about youth apprenticeships. Given this group's understanding of apprenticeships, I imagine you're quite familiar with what some of those may sound like in your efforts to increase awareness across the state, as well as then participation and opportunity barriers, so structural and situational challenges that may limit access for certain areas or groups. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Andrea. We integrated these findings to create a framework of recommendations that she is going to discuss.
Thank you, Amy. And thank you for advancing the slide. So what you'll notice from the diagram on the left of the screen, or I believe it will be on the left of your screen, there really was, from the analysis, a complex, multidimensional, multi-level factors that need coordinated attention in order to ultimately advance youth apprenticeships in the state. Even though once you get into the full report, there is a litany of positives that are occurring that are already expanding opportunities. And so from the work, from the analysis, we have created this five-dimension framework of recommendations, which we'll walk through in the next two slides. The first is, and this was consistent with the legislative call for a framework and system for maximizing efficiencies and expanding youth apprenticeship opportunities for students. And this integrated framework, which is why it's designed as it is, would address the six statewide priorities that were listed in the initial call. It would help also to address barriers, improve alignment, and build on existing strengths and the collaborative context that all of the organizations and industry and business already find themselves in. And so these recommendations, our suggestion is that they balance immediate needs with long-term goals that the state has for youth apprenticeships. And so what you'll notice is the first and top lever is the governance levers. And so as Vic mentioned in the very beginning, there's a great deal of coordination, relationship building, and relational trust that the agencies currently have. And in order to maximize that, formalizing governance structures would be important. So we intentionally start with governance and give recommendations specifically around providing role clarification, ensuring coordinating mechanisms, providing for opportunities for strategic decision-making processes, resource allocation, and overall system coherence as a foundation for the other four recommendations, which include addressing structural levers such as creating accessible role maps and flowcharts, partnership templates, so making it easier for agencies and organizations and industry to engage in the partnerships, in addition to formalizing in the governance, like MOUs, for example, between agencies and organizations. Other structural opportunities and levers would include creating unified performance monitoring with an integrated data system, as Amy had mentioned earlier, and engaging specifically in continuous improvement around key performance indicators and deciding what those key performance indicators would be. And then increasing accessibility equitably across the state, regardless of the region or businesses that are in particular areas. The third recommendation is the operational levers, specifically providing opportunities for joint planning teams that span stakeholder groups, creating diagnostic tools that can be used broadly for alignment and readiness for youth apprenticeships. So maybe not accepting everybody from the beginning who wants to offer youth apprenticeships, but being increasingly intentional about that to address the short and long-term gains. Leveraging multiple communication platforms and venues to get more information out, and then communicating regularly success stories. There were a number of them that we heard about and then informally heard about more, and there seems to be a unique opportunity to amplify those stories as you go. And that's, of course, part of the communication. And then strategic investment and capacity, allocating recurring and braided funding for sustained interagency governance, operations, coordination, communication, infrastructure, cross-agency staffing, potentially, and data analysis of key performance indicators, while being able to review processes and policies that address the partnership and coordination opportunities that are both needed and that are there but not yet taken advantage of. And then we'll move to the next slide. So through this process, we, again, back to the foundation of the partnership that we engage in as a research practice partner. Once the report was completed, the group that we met with and coordinated with, Vic and Amy, from the beginning, also pushed us a little bit and said, okay, that's a lot. And it was, and as you'll see in the report, it sort of maps out maybe a 3 to 5 year plan in that way. And so in through their encouragement and conversation and partnership with all of the entities that agencies that were working together, we came back and reviewed the recommendations and then narrowed the field a bit, specifically generating two types of policy levers, legislative policy and organizational policy, and recognizing that those are and should be different in how you proceed to advance youth apprenticeships. The next would be formal agreements, and then the final division would be operational practices. And we see those as waterfalling to one another. So setting in place both legislative and organizational policies opens the door for then formal agreements, so that regardless of the people who are involved, the opportunities can continue. And then where you have formal agreements. So we narrowed the field down. I think Amy Andre is going to talk about this in a moment, that where there are, we start at formal agreements, there would be operational practices. So as you can see that regardless of what stage we enter into, operational practices, those day-to-day processes and tools and workflows that would be needed to implement programs, advance programs, expand them, and the procedures and policies that would be necessary to facilitate success would be in place. And so here we're back to these three primary, if you will, policy endeavors, the first being the governance and coordination. We won't read through all these because they also want to give Amy Andre an opportunity to speak specifically to these. And then second is the funding, budget appropriations, and resource use. And third is the information sharing and data systems. So how do you tell the story? How do you know what's successful? And where do you find improvements are needed? And so with that, if we can move to the last slide. Amy Reynolds has already provided our contact information. We're happy to answer additional questions. But with that, we'll turn it over to Amy Andre. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. And Nicole, we can go to the last slide on this. So we obviously have a lot of great work ahead of us. And building on the recommendations that Andrea just talked about, We all, the involved offices, agreed that our first step was to establish a youth apprenticeship governing council. And to kind of go through their role, it will really be to create alignment and clarity across the youth apprenticeship system. So this includes defining agency roles so we can reduce duplication, establish a shared statewide definition on youth apprenticeships, common quality standards, ensuring consistency for all of our schools, our higher education partners, and our employers, so they're all hearing the same information. And the council will also support coordinated implementation by setting up cross-agency structures, clear decision-making processes, and defined communication protocols. So again, that all of the stakeholders and also our students, families, LEAs, and employers are consistent and aligned across the board. And then finally, the council will guide system-level strategy by recommending student and employer incentives, advancing shared performance measures in an integrated data system, and then an aligned phased statewide implementation and messaging around high-wage and in-demand industry priorities. So they'll really be taking all of the findings and recommendations from this study and helping us come up with a phased implementation strategy. We added some reporting requirements for next session, the 2027 session, and that'll be focused on statewide funding needs that we still have, employee incentive structures, and then that statewide action plan. So this will ensure that all of us and policymakers will have the information that we need to make decisions and future investments in this area. So with that, thank you guys so much for allowing us to join this conversation today, and a huge thank you to Utah Policy Education Center for their incredible work. Hopefully I can speak for all of the offices that have been involved in this and say that we're really excited to move this work forward, and having them dive into this has been both validating and essential in helping us make data-driven decisions. So I think, Nicole, with that, are we open to questions?
Yes.
Perfect.
So many questions that I've got. Any questions for Vic or Amy or Policy Institute? I'm very interested in the 2027 employer incentives. My gut feel from the report and just being on the other side of it, if there was a less than a barrier to entry to get them to employer to test it a little bit more somehow and be incentivized somehow and then see the benefits of it so that they don't drop out. I'd love to see what that looks like. We are still in the works of getting our new commissioner of apprenticeship position filled. We're very close. We have... We're close. I'm just going to say that. We're very close. Hopefully the next couple of weeks we'll have that. Nicole, can you help us understand how that role, because it reports to... how it coordinates and impacts based off this study and based off what we're doing with Outready and USB.
So I've been lucky to call the commissioners out that I've kind of been helping a little bit with some of those duties. The commissioner position works very closely with Amy, with Outready, as well as we typically have Gretchen Hayward with the Utah State Board of Education, that really the three of those folks work very closely within this realm and partner. We all participate in the policy academy that Vic referenced, and we also have Amy and Reckon participate on our apprenticeship committee here with the board. So anywhere there's overlap, we ensure that we're collaborating and working together. So really that's one of the main roles the commissioner has, is ensuring that we're collaborating and working together and seeing how we can leverage each other's services and how we can be cohesive and help move those efforts together. So we definitely don't work in silos. We try and all collaboratively work together. And I think even with these recommendations, the plan is that all of those entities would continue to be key partners,
most likely the commissioner, right, continuing to be involved in the efforts as recommendations are identified and collaborating within the department and helping the youth apprenticeship efforts to move forward. Right. It'd be nice for the commissioner to step in with the study then.
Yeah, I mean, they'll like have it all laid out, and he's been great and worked and collaborated with the University of Utah with getting a lot of good solid recommendations as well.
Awesome. Any other questions? Vic, anything else you want to wrap up with or close with?
No, no, thank you, Madam Chair. Just again, a big thank you to DWS leadership and the State Board of Education. This doesn't work unless we all work together. And so it's been really fun, you know, doing this study together, finding out where our weaknesses are, leaning into our strengths. But there'll be a lot more to come, and excited to have this this council put together that'll have, you know, leadership from the state, leadership from industry, which I think is one of the most important things that we do, is make sure that employers are heavily involved in all of this and helping us set up that governance structure. It has to be in the best interest of students and employers, or else it's all for naught.
Thank you. Next thing on our agenda is, if everybody can bring up this document, this one. For those of you that have been here for a few years, this document should look familiar. Last year we had, I don't even remember this, she talked the most last year about it when we reported out. But I will tell you, we interviewed this as the executive committee for 45 minutes this morning. We had a really deep discussion, particularly around the number at the very bottom, which I'll let Lindsay pan on in a minute. But take a look at this. Lindsay's going to lead us out and help us remember what we're looking at. But we did challenge her on a few additional things we'd like to dive into based on the discussion we had today. So I'm going to let Lindsay give us an overview and remind us what we're looking at. And then Alicia and Erin are also going to jump in and talk about their areas with their outcomes as well. So Lindsay, that's on plan. That's for you to lead out.
Erin,
I'm going to hijack things.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. So if everybody can just really draw their attention to the WIOA program year 2024 outcomes, which is really 2024-2025 a little bit, outcomes. I'll turn the time over to Erin.
Okay, thank you. I know we have a couple new members. They're just going to introduce or reintroduce myself. My name is Erin Thompson. I am the Vocational Rehabilitation Program Director with the Department of Workforce Services. So myself, Lindsay, and Alicia are going to go over the program outcomes for the WIOA, Workforce Innovations and Opportunities Act, core programs, which you all have an opportunity to provide input on and shape the direction of the programs and the state plan that we've talked about before. But before we jump into the exciting numbers and trends, we just wanted to provide a high-level overview of what these numbers mean, how we got there, and how they're reflective of the progress that our programs are making. So under WIOA, these common performance measures really help evaluate how effective the programs are on helping our customers or the individuals that we serve prepare people for obtaining and maintaining employment. And they're also really good measures that help us know that we're helping to meet the needs of employers. The measures that we're going to talk about really focus on employment outcomes, earning, skill development, and credentials to help ensure accountability and continuous improvement for the various programs. A lot of data and percentages on here. But really just wanted to point your attention to the columns that talk about, like, negotiated outcomes. So for workforce development, for rehabilitation and adult education, we work with our federal oversight agencies to negotiate the targets for our specific programs. So we're in communication with labor, the Rehabilitation Service Administration, and the Department of Education that really reflects the economic conditions that are going on. Individuals that we're serving, a lot of them have barriers or at risk, so those shape the targets and explain why you will see variations between program outcomes for vocational rehabilitation and the WIOA youth program. Under program members measures, the first two that we wanted to talk about were employment after exit. So this really is the percentage of customers or students for adult education or vocational rehabilitation who receive services
and their employment is they have services. So they've completed really looking at that employment that they have. Doesn't necessarily have to be with the same employer, really supporting their career growth and pathway. And that second measure is looking at the population or percentage of individuals who are employed that fourth quarter after exit. The third measure, median wages, pretty straightforward, is the typical or median wage for that population that second quarter after exit. Another key measure is credential attainment. So again, this is the percentage of customers or individuals that we're serving who are connected to a training program that leads to an industry-recognized credential. And there is a range of credentials that can be obtained by the individuals that we're serving. Could be a high school diploma or a GED, and it's countable if leading to employment and the exit of the program. So broad scope of individuals that we're looking at, and we're tracking the information while they're connected to services and up to a year after they exit. So some examples in addition to a high school diploma or GED could be an associate's degree, bachelor's degree, an industry credential or licensure, such as a CDL license, or someone gets their really skilled and technical related occupation, such as HVAC or IT certification. Another measure that leads towards a credential that we track and report on is a measurable skill gain. So for individuals who have that educational goal and who are working towards a credential, it's looking at the progress they're making while they're still connected and receiving services. So you can have customers who are reporting multiple measurable skill gains as they make progress in their plans. So that could include if someone's going to the community college and they pass a certain number of credit hours, that's a skill gain. If they're advancing in, you know, one or more education levels in an adult education program, those are all the things that count. And something else that also counts is someone is doing an on-the-job training and they have like established training milestones. That's the wide scope of things that are really reflected in those measurable skill gains. So again, with these measures that are listed on here, we all have a great opportunity to work with agencies to establish targets every 2 years. These measures were in our previous combined state plan that was posted, and they're also going to be reflected as with additional guidance in the plan going forward. I'm going to hand it over to Lindsay to talk about the employer measure.
Yes. Excited to talk about the employer measure today. So the effectiveness of the employer measure we've had for the last 6 or 7 years, but it has been a trial measure. So we were kind of, the Department of Labor and Department of Education were working on options for that measure. Just this last program year, they finalized what measure they would like us to look at for our employer measure. So this is the first year we've measured this as a center for the state of Utah. So this is a baseline year. We have never had this measure before, so we don't know how we've grown or where we're at. We also don't know where other states are at as well. But the measure is looking at the percentage of the participants from all of the four programs that Aaron talked about who are employed with the same employer the second quarter after they stop receiving services and the fourth quarter after they stop receiving services. So that's basically for a year after they stop receiving services, are they still employed with that same employer? So it's looking at the percentage of customers served and are they employed with that same employer. The new measure, we are still looking at data on it. We're still analyzing different things with it, understanding the details behind it, looking at what impact we can have on it. But the goal of the measure is to really ensure that we're supporting both the customer side and the employer side, ensuring that the customer is prepared and ready to maintain that employment. They have the skills to be successful, and they're in a good job. And now we're helping the employer side by first making sure they have a good quality job that those job seekers can go into at a strong wage, is supportive, has a good culture, hopefully, and that also that employer is willing to work with individuals who may have barriers to employment and may need some support with soft skills, and that we can help provide that assistance if that employer needs. So it's kind of a wraparound multi approach of how we are serving employers and our job seekers in the state of Utah. So the new measure this year, we will be able to share more information next year, and we will share some more details behind it as we're able to gather more detail on that.
We've also asked, Lindsay said that in the next couple months we should have other states because nobody's we don't know what 68.3% means. Although the executive committee had a lot of ideas about what we think it means. But we'd have to just understand some other states, potentially ones that are maybe, what do we call single state anymore? States that would align with UPOS a little bit more, just to understand, what, because we don't know what it means. There's a lot of speculation around that, but any question about the employer measure before they jump into the other measures is new. We don't know what it means. But I'm really actually kind of excited to see what it means.
I'm excited to see some trends.
Any questions? Okay, keep going.
So we will talk then next about our how we get to the measures and how we go, how we are measured on each of these outcomes to ensure that we are being successful in our program implementation. And so as Erin mentioned, we typically work programs negotiates with our respective federal agencies every 2 years as part of our state plan process. So we receive a lot of information from the Department of Labor, including trends of where we've achieved in the past. And then they also use a statistical adjustment model to predict where we might be in the future. And that statistical adjustment model is based on the individual we serve, what their characteristics are. They look at their individual disabilities, their students got a high school diploma, if they're single parents, low income. They consider all those factors with what populations we've served in the past to give us their recommendation of what they think we can achieve in the next 2 years. They also include our Utah economic data, so they include unemployment information, our job growth, and other employment statistics to measure where we think Utah will grow or if we're struggling and need to account for a lower economy in Utah. So they use that model to give us a measure, and then we meet individually with them and negotiate what we our targets for each of our programs for that are effective for 2 years at a time. So those targets are reflected in the negotiated goal column for each of the measures. And so we do those for all those measures every 2 years. And then we achieve an actual outcome every year where we take all our program data and figure out what is our goal and our measure for each of those individual measures. And then how it is measured to see if we are successful is they first use that statistical adjustment model again to see of the people that we served in that year, what was their characteristics, and then if they have a lot of barriers or a lot of circumstances that make it harder for them to obtain employment, they will reduce our measure by a certain percentage. If Utah's economy is doing really well, they may increase our measure, or if Utah's economy is struggling, they may decrease that measure. It just depends on what that statistical adjustment model shows. We pay very close attention to that to see what populations we're serving and monitor that as we look at the actual outcomes. Then they take that final actual outcome number and they compare it to our negotiated targets. And if we are within 50% of our individual negotiated target, then we are considered passing. So if we adult is within 50% of the negotiated target for employment second quarter after closure, then we are considered passing for that individual target. Then what they do is they take an average of all of the indicators across the program, average them together, our achievement rate for those indicators, and if we're within 90%, or if we're above 90%, then we're considered passing for that overall program. So that's taking into account if we're struggling in one measure, but we're doing really, really great in another measure, it says overall our program is doing really well. So we look at that on individual program basis to see that we're achieving that goal.
So that's like really critical to understand when you look at efficiency altering, but you see things lower than the negotiated goal. It's that 50% mark with the overall 90% on everything. So I just remember last year we were like, that's not, you're below. And we had to understand that a little bit more. So,
yep. Any questions on that before we talk about the individual data? Okay. So just a couple of things I wanted to highlight for the adult dislocated worker and youth program today. We've improved our measurable skill gain rate. That's in the column on the far right. We've been able to achieve that goal. That's been a hard measure for us in the past because it's really hard to document. It's tricky to document. The guidance on it is very prescriptive. and can be restrictive on what things we can capture. And so it's been a long journey for us, and we've been able to achieve it this year, and we're very, very excited. And overall, our average between the three programs is 111%. So we're excited to have that this year. Of course, we want to see it higher than where it is now. We're continuing to grow that and strengthen it, continuing to improve our guidance, hopefully get some further clarification, and improve our data collection.
How many is 90 and you're 111?
Mm-hmm.
How come we're not cheering?
Sorry, I'm tired.
I actually really cared on the adult education credential attainment goal, but we'll get to that.
The other one for Paratannon for another tier that we want to highlight is our Real Youth Program, which is our waterfall program for youth age 14 to 24. This year we were able to exceed all of our negotiated targets.
And that is
fantastic. They're all green. But Real Youth is all the way across, was above the negotiated goal.
Yeah. So. Should have made it in the first. It was not passing, not all of them made routine last year.
Yeah, if you'll remember, there were a few that were lower last year.
Yes.
A big part of the discussion today with the executive committee, too, and Stephen asked specifically why, how come all of a sudden? And Liz talked a lot about the focus on youth, specifically within the department, because the numbers were below target last year. So.
Yeah.
Very great.
Thank you.
And Lindsay loves who we
teach. I do. It's a good program. So excited to see some growth. There's always an opportunity for growth, but we're excited to see that the changes and the focus we're making are having impact. So that's wonderful. I'm going to turn it over to Erin, and then we should talk about their program.
Right. So for vocational relocation, just a quick reminder, the population that we serve, of course, are all individuals with disabilities. This reflects youth who are entering the workforce for the first time, adults maybe have years of work experience, or maybe this is also their first time going to work, and also individuals with more significant disabilities who may be paired with a job coach and working 8 to 10 hours a week. So it's a pretty wide range of individuals with different functioning levels. An area that we really wanted to highlight was the increase in exceeding our target with median wages. I would say a lot of this has been some of our state time goals. So we're really intentional with our counselors talking with their clients to provide more career counseling on higher paying occupations and occupations that will lead to growth and career expansion. We also leverage some of the department's resources through workforce research and allies to really arm our clients that we're working with informed decisions on labor market, and of course some of the partnerships that we've leveraged with the Workforce Development Division to make sure that our clients are really seeing the full option of jobs that are out there and not being, you know, pigeonholed into jobs for people with disabilities. Other areas where we did make some incremental progress with is credential attainment and skill gain. Again, really showing the progress that our clients are making in documenting. An area that we did slightly see some decline within that second and fourth quarter employment after exit. Don't have the clear reason as to why. We have some assumptions that when people come back to us, if they were closed and need additional help, that is common. We are asking a lot of questions about what didn't work and things that we can identify if we develop a new plan to help them be successful. Some things that we've already included in our plan is providing more support to employers, and that's an initiative that our business relations director, Leah, over there has been really leading out on with our employer workshops. We recently did some targeted training on helping businesses understand how do you work with a job coach. A lot of times there's a lot of misunderstandings and things that we hear from our clients where it was great, I had a supervisor that was supportive, but that person left and the next person came and really didn't understand how things work and the resources that are out there. So those are things that are going to be goals in our plan to really build on to get those trending in a higher direction for the next 2 years.
For adult education, these are the population that are 16 years old or older. So we have an influx of 16 and 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds in the last couple of years, especially this last year. And so as far as the credential attainment, which we knocked out of the water, actually, this year, this is 24-25. Yes.
Thank you for joining in.
We're seeing a lot more 16 to 18-year-olds, and many are our recs right now. They're usually very close to their high school diploma, but they are not willing to stay in high school for whatever reason. So that's said, as I'm looking at the number, that's one of the bigger numbers that we serve, are those 16 to 18-year-olds, and getting them completed. We are looking, we're actually implementing a program here at the state, and it just depends on our LEAs or our districts and what they want to do to integrate it, but it's a post-graduation pathway. So instead of having a dropout in high school, 16 to 18-year-olds, where we take up that slack, then we would keep them in high school, and they would work on GED, kind of a focused graduation through GED. So they can stay in high school, still be able to take advantage of a lot of the high school benefits, but they would end up with a GED diploma, basically. So I want to keep some of those in high school a little bit more. I mean, it's good to have a number like that, but it's better to have them stay in high school as well. So, and then going back over to the employment second quarter after closure and fourth quarter, while we attain those goals, we know that we're still under reporting. We do a data match with DWS, but that data match has to include, we have to have certain identifiers to be able to make that data match. So we're taking one count those identifiers, those people who have left, and we're making an increased contact with our programs to get that information from those exited students so that we have a better outcome there. We are seeing increases in those percentages that we do get a hold of, and we're able to get that information, so I hope that number continues to increase as well. Those were the biggies for me. We had a little bit lower measurable skill gains. We look at that at the program level, and those skill gains are, what Aaron was saying, usually after a certain amount of hours in the program of education, instruction, we give them a test to be able to see if they are gaining that knowledge, and if they're not, we look at the indicators as to why that may be happening if they're not. For instance, in the level of instruction. So looking at that, or the program, they may be leaving the program before the allotted hours that they would need to take a post test. That's somebody who maybe has a higher level of scoring on those testing, and they exit the program quicker because they passed a GED or they've reached the credit that they need before that number of hours that we like to say. To have this many hours to be able to really test them and get a valid test out of it. So those are a couple of things that may have influenced that number. So
the final thing we want to add is, thank you so much, is there's a lot of people behind these numbers. Like, we can talk about numbers all day, we can share our results, but there's some great people behind these numbers. And those stories are reflected in our annual narrative report. And so Nicole's going to share that report. We will also share in the minute. It's posted on our website as well. But this is the annual report that we compile each year. It's about 25 pages, so it's a short report. It talks about how we provide services. It also just reviews our best practices, how we are able to achieve these outcomes across our four programs. And then the very last few pages are our success stories. So by Heather read the four, there's additional stories in here. There's video links. There's a lot of great stories between the people behind these numbers and the barriers that are in the customer's face and how they're able to overcome them to achieve great things. So it's a great opportunity to see the impact that we have on all of our programs and also how we work together. There's several stories about customers that we work together on to help them achieve their goals. So we encourage you to check that report out. And if you have any questions on anything there, please let us know. And that's all we have.
Thank you so much. I think we'll see a little bit more of this this year. Ask you a bit some of the trend lines and things that have been happening since we started recording this out. So we'll circle back around probably in April and July on this. We're going to do a little brainstorming session in April with the executive committee and then maybe July present some officials. Thank you. Okay, next is our workforce development outreach report. So for those of you online, this is the document that we are referencing right now, and I'm going to go ahead and give the time over to Helen to give us updates. Can you talk loudly for all of you online?
Yes, I sure will. I just wanted to highlight a couple of items from our report for this quarter, and just a reminder of some of the resources and tools that we have available. One of the ones that I did want to highlight was the Logan Job Fair, and this is for employers out there, the resources that we have in our local centers. We had a community job fair at the Logan Employment Center where we had about 8 hiring employers representing several different industries in the Logan area. And we had about 150 job seekers come in and participate in this. So this is just a reminder about what we can offer for some of our employers in the local area, utilizing our on-site resources, you know, bringing someplace to do an event or participate in an event, taking advantage of that, reach out to your local workforce development specialist, because they have those resources that's over there for to help you with your hiring needs. Another event that I wanted to just highlight, and there's a couple of these in here that utilize our VR equipment. A lot of you have had an opportunity to test and utilize some of the equipment here. It's a great resource for those that are doing career exploration, helping them identify what their interests might be. We had staff at a couple of our different fairs utilize the VR equipment, and I think we've got some big events coming up tomorrow. And as well, that we are going to utilize that. Yeah, so if you haven't had a chance to experiment, I guess, with the VR equipment, give it a try. It's a great resource that we have, and it helps our job seekers and customers identify where their interests are and kind of explore more on some of the interests that they might have and have some real-world simulations. As well as the best interest in our modern skilled trades. The other thing I wanted to talk about is some of our untapped labor pools. Recently we held a career fair for the Utah Department of Corrections, and we've had a couple over the last couple of months, and we've had approximately 18 employers participate with 320 plus in attendance that were engaged. And so we just want to increase that awareness of this untapped labor pool for those with maybe a background. And this will also help incentivize some employer collaboration because we do offer a bonding program with the Department of Workforce Services. And then we also had some great events with our military and veterans with the military information networking and outreach event that was held recently at Weber State University, which is a great collaboration. We have many resources, employers that were available there. And then just a quick highlight with the federal layoffs that were happening. We had some staff that were able to go on base and offer some assistance for those that were experiencing and needed some information regarding local resources that are available during the set. If you get a chance, please go. We have some great events that are also coming up. And if you have any questions, reach out to
anybody on the back of the
screen. Oh, yes. Yeah, anybody on the back of that screen. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay. Whitney, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
George, ready to talk to us?
I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we're going to jump into committee report out, and we will start with apprenticeships.
Awesome. So a few of the things that I'm going over today have already been shared. We heard some great information from Amy and Andrea about some of the things regarding youth apprenticeships. And we also heard that the process of selecting a new apprenticeship commissioner is still underway, and we have hopes that a decision is going to happen sometime in the next few weeks. Also, Department of Workforce Services is in the process of hiring a new apprenticeship navigator that will cover the northern part of the state. Talent Ready is focusing on data collection within apprenticeships to better tell the story of these programs. They're currently working to determine what data should be collected. This includes what data would help increase employer engagement in apprenticeships. So any thoughts or insights that any of you may have would be appreciated there. And they're looking to present those recommendations to the Talent Ready board in the coming weeks. So if you have any thoughts or ideas of what data should be collected there, please let me know or share. And then the Utah State Board of Education Teacher Apprenticeship Program is growing. The 60th pre-apprentice was just registered since the program began in March 2025, so last year. And then the next steps for a possible expansion to youth are also being considered. Apprenticeship opportunities are continuing to expand in the healthcare industry, and there's a focus specifically on expanding these programs into rural communities. And then just to give you a few quick stats, since July through the end of last year, there are 1,125 new apprentices, 485 completed apprenticeships, and then the number of current youth apprentices, which is the ages of 16 to 24, is about 2,300. So good numbers. Apprenticeships are increasing. Getting the new commissioner on board and a new navigator for Northern Utah will be massively beneficial for sure.
Hey, Kaylee, will you send me those numbers with that in my email? Thank you.
Will do.
I could use them for some ammo tomorrow in a presentation.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
So, thank you.
I'm going to turn the time over to Matt now to talk about youth.
Thank you. 2025, we try to spend probably half of the year figuring out who we are. That's our identity. It's been kind of a fun little ride, but I think we've got it figured out, at least for 2026. Part of that journey was just trying to work on different projects, and again, we've got a great committee, a great team. Amy Graff was kind of right in point on the Raising Cane's project out there in Kane County, collaborating with Kanab City, some of the schools out there, and the local Chamber of Commerce. We just got to, you know, build a program, build a model that we could probably try to duplicate in other rural Utah communities. So we can probably focus more on that as we kind of evolve and do some more things there. But the other part of our year was just learning what the other committees do. So, you know, Stephen and his committee with serving individuals with disability, Whitney with her committee with apprenticeships, was kind enough to allow us to attend their committee meetings and learn what is it that they do, and they do a lot. Part of the challenges that we had as a committee is we wanted to make sure that we didn't duplicate, that we wanted to be as efficient as possible and not reproduce something that's already been done and figure out what is being done. With that exercise, we learned a lot of everything that's going out there. And going back to our identity, we believe that this year, 2026, our identity is to support. Because there's so many amazing committees that deals with our clientele age group, you know, the youth. And we're going, okay, they're doing amazing things. Let's figure out what we can do as a youth committee to support them and to engage or to expand what is it that they're doing. So we're going to tweak our committee agenda that we've been working off of. And within our committee agenda, we do have a paragraph called focus, vision, and then we also have working strategies in the back. We will look at what we've learned in 2025 from our committee partners and adjust those so that it applies better and gives us a better focus on how we can do what we do better. And really, at the end of the day, I thought it was fun attending these meetings and learning what these groups do. And what we're going to do with our agenda is actually have the apprenticeship as a line item or working or serving those with disabilities as another line item and potentially have someone within our committee be the champion or the owner of those line items and thereby report and or overlap some of the things that are being done. We mentioned it several times. We just did a better job of telling our story. And I think the more people tell the same story, the stronger the story becomes. So we're hopeful that in 2026, that's going to be kind of our push as a youth committee. And then finally, we are grateful for a new addition to our family. We appreciate Tyler. He did not exhaust our entire NIL budget. So those of you that think about jumping in, those who think about jumping into the transfer portal, please feel free to do so. We're open to discussions at that point. But again, we appreciate everything and everyone's doing, and look forward to an exciting 2026.
I'd also say, if you don't have to just serve on the committee, if there's two committees that are interested,
thank you, Matt. I'm excited. Matt and I talked a little bit. It's a little bit of an anomaly because it folds into so many things. So I think this new direction of collaborating closely, specifically with those other three committees, will be very advantageous on the youth side. So thank you so much. Stephen, you want to talk about your... Oh, yes, sorry, real quick. I should add it, because it does fall into youth, and it falls into a friendship a little bit as well. I made it read all the way through this, she snapped my picture and did a little highlight on the corner of this. Amy and her team have been going around Iron County with me the last couple of months, and I visited with Whitney and Matt quite a bit about this from the apprenticeship side and the youth side about finding access points with the VR headsets into our schools. The teams in our one-stop centers have tried really hard, but sometimes finding champions and getting in front of the right person within the high schools has been challenging. But we've had a lot of success in Iron County. We started to branch into Washington County. You see some success here at UAB. The thing I love about it is we can see what's going on with apprenticeships. You've heard the numbers from Whitney. They're growing. You're seeing what Vic and his team are doing with the study and what they're doing with apprenticeships. It's rapidly growing. And the more we can get into, in my opinion, those high schools and allow students to see and test what they could, you know, play around with and start. Most of those things that are offered on the VR are apprenticeship opportunities, things that they can jump into. And I just see a lot more kids heading that direction. We're seeing it. My own son did it. It was a great avenue for him, and he's doing very, very well. And now looking at different, you know, stackable into higher education credentialing. So tomorrow we are presenting to the Utah State Board Association at their meetings that all of the school board members and state and superintendents and business administrators hoping to find some of the champions and find ways to our counselors are busy. It's hard for them to go to a teacher and say, hey, could you give me time in your classroom? But once we reach out to teachers specifically, we went specifically to an engineering classroom in one of the high schools. They ate it up. In fact, we were there, and within 30 minutes, he's like, can you come next semester for my next classes? And I'm like, yes, we can. Another place we're really having a lot of success, if any of you are integrated in your school districts, is alternative programs. Right now, specifically in Iron County, the alternative school, we got in there, and I'll tell you one of our barriers. If there's parents that don't do a lot of technology and haven't done VR, if we send an email and say, hey, we want to come in and do VR headsets, I can tell you right now, the counselor there was like, I don't even know what VR is, so I'm not going to touch that email. as soon as we went in and sat down with her, she's like, can you come in and talk? All my students, the graduating program is a little bit different for them. And so they graduate all during the year. And she said, can you come every, I think it's like 8 weeks, because they do their semester, or their terms a little quicker. Can you come every 8 weeks and work with this little group of students that are getting ready to leave so that they can explore stuff? And it's open to avenues. Amy's team is already ready to go, and we'll continue to have that relationship. So just trying to find a way to get more opportunities for these students, because the ones that come in know about the apprenticeship programs, and so they can talk to the students about apprenticeships and looking at that as their next step during high school and then after as well. So excited. Hopefully it goes well. I don't know, I'm up against legislative updates and AI tomorrow, so hopefully they'll choose our session because it's going to be fun. But we'll see how it goes. I'll be excited to report on that, and I appreciate Amy and Lindsay helping me out with that. With that, we are going to jump into serving individuals with disabilities, and you have a lot of stuff in your packet for that.
Yes. So first of all, there is a lot of material there that you can look at later. I will indicate, since the NAL brought up it, that our budget is significant this year. Any thoughts about this? I think we've superseded everything.
Joe Ryan's message.
Joe Ryan.
Okay, just kind of some of the bad news is the order of selection has been implemented, which means that currently the most significantly disabled category is open for compliance. So those with significant disabilities or disabilities that are disabled are currently closed for compliance. Now, to put a little lipstick on that pig, Karen.
While we do have closed service priority categories, we are still able to provide pre-employment transition services to students with disabilities. So basically, if a student between the ages of 14 through 22, if they're enrolled in a program, we can provide that career exploration, real work-based, job-based learning experiences, counseling on self-advocacy. So, again, we can provide that through contract providers that are available on our websites, our staff. We can still help children.
It's all about the children.
It's our platform.
They are
for the children.
There are some positives that are still existing. October was National Disability Employment Awareness Month, 80th anniversary. Very positive things going on there. We participated in a number of presentations due to that, including the Sherman Northern Utah, Hobel Sioux, the Utah Associated Community Services Conference. And importantly, we're in the midst now of planning our Flash Mentoring event, which will happen next month. It's basically a one-on-one mentoring opportunity with individuals. We need people to participate. And we especially need people in industry that participate. It's an hour, and it's virtual. And I've participated several times now. I highly recommend it. Good experience for you. Great experience for these individuals. They need that mentoring as they're moving forward. So, please reach out to us. Let us know if you can participate and give us an hour of your time. You was mentioned earlier, the workability, career exploration, job fair happened in October. Great participation. Almost 350 job seekers that were there, 24 business partners, so great situations there. We participated in the reentry simulation at the downtown district. We did a tour of Mitrex in South Jordan. We're currently coordinating a job fair in Moab, a career fair in Moab that will happen February 19th. Also, in March of 26th, we're doing an employer workshop. And then in April, we're doing a workability, the workability career fair again, another one. So lots of things going on, tremendous things happening, and all these things are in your packets. So please refer to them, reach out, let us know if you can help, if you'd like to participate, or if you got people that we should contact to say, hey, this is something you need to do. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions for Stephen?
Everybody else? Okay. Moving on, James, I hate to put you on the spot, but are you able to do a career pathway update?
Kind of. You have to forgive me. I'm in the state of Georgia at the moment, mobile, so I'll do the best I can with what we have. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, you're doing great. Keep going.
Okay, excellent. Well, it was kind of one of those meetings where you had to be there in order to witness the magic that we had. Kevin Nguyen with Proxima did an amazing presentation regarding what they provide for nursing school for English learners. It was a very engaging presentation. Everybody was looking to get more info on that. We have the slide deck if anybody's wanting that to have a copy of. And then we had a great presentation by Jimmy McDonough with Talent Ready, which was great for me because I knew Talent Ready, but I didn't know Talent Ready. So it's great to give a really good breakdown from what he shared. He and his team gave a good breakdown of what Talent Ready is. And so the community was very enthused about what was shared to, you know, just understand all the resources we have at our fingertips with our committee. And then we had a update from the, I think it was the Rehabilitation Summit. I believe that's what it was called. That was given. And then I don't know if Amir or anybody else in the committee that's present that maybe can chime in on anything else that I may have missed.
They are here. Thank you, James. That's a great update. And I'm so thankful that you turned in from Georgia. That's so great. Is there anything else that he missed that you want to add?
So he did a really great job.
You're going to have to come up to the table.
So James did an excellent job. The only thing he didn't mention is we had an update from the National Governors Association Conference. Yvette presented that, and it was about service to career pathways. And then we had an update from vocational rehabilitation. They just talked about their priority services. So that was
a big meeting.
Yeah. Okay. And we're also looking forward to collaborating with the youth committee and the second one, the
apprenticeship.
Yes.
I'm starting to see this trifecta of youth apprenticeships and career pathways. See how that starts to blend for 2026. Last is operations, but we covered like everything. Let me make sure we covered everything. Jerry, check. So we talked about the LEAD certification tool that's coming up. Watch for the wheel plan. Hop on the town hall if you can. Cheyenne will be sending out that meeting invite. And then we have the affiliate certification. And then we gave Gary a giant agenda. If you're on the operations committee, please don't miss the next meeting. A few other things in your packet, just updates on the job fairs. There's the next one coming up. Oh, it's today. Oh, we'll send out in March, and hopefully today's went well because it ended before our meeting started. So there's another one coming up in March. So these are great if you get these, you can come out to your own HR department, but then anybody in your network. Which literally, it's just an easy way for passive candidates to check out your company. So always something to know. Lastly, you should have all these on your calendar already, but our next three meetings for the year, October, always being a little bit in flux, depending on what anyone you talk to them, it decides to do.
Did it change again?
I'm not going to put it on the record, but just saying, October's still in flux, and that's all I'm going to say. It's on the sex stream that I just have. October 21st. So, anyways, watch for those meetings. Our next meeting should be on your calendar, but it's on April 9th. So, you know, schedule around your spring break. And is there any public comment? Any other business?
Okay. We've got to the agenda, so that I've seen a motion to adjourn.
I was so motion.
Thank you. See your motion to adjourn. So moved. Thank you, everyone. See you April 9th.
Perfect.
Meeting. Well, April 9th.